Conservative versus radical, two extremes which offer us a window into considering the future of Lutheranism as well.
Dr. Larry Rast speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
For there is a place for the confessional witness Lutherans have to offer in the places in which we find ourselves today. But that witness will only be faithful if it conserves the insights of the Reformation. And that conservation, I believe, is needed today more than ever.
You can listen to Dr. Rath's presentation, Making the Case for the Conservative Reformation, and teachings by Chris Roseborough, Carl Fakencher, Adrian Dorr-Heinz, Brian Wolfmiller, and Jonathan Fisk on an audio DVD from the Making the Case conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300 to Issues Etc. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. The headline from the Washington Post, why some young evangelical women are increasingly drawn to feminism and Hillary Clinton. That question will occupy us for the remainder of Issues Etc. today. It's actually even got a book and a term by which it is called Jesus Feminism. Joining us to talk about this trend of some young evangelical women, Rebecca Curtis, pastor's wife and mother of seven children. She has a master's degree from Concordia Seminary and co-author of the book Ladylike, Living Biblically. Rebecca, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hello, thank you.
What do you make of this term for these young evangelical women, Jesus feminists?
Well, to begin with, I would object to that on a second commandment basis. I don't really get into the use of our Lord's holy name as a brand or an adjective or a tool for getting anything done. And I'm sure if you wanted to, you could find a Jesus anything if you're going to use it in that sense. You could find a Jesus housewife just as easily. So I agree it's probably a good marketing tool, but not one that I myself would want to employ.
Other than that, what is it meant to denote and how do you respond to it?
The idea that's behind this is making a case for adopting a lot of the ideals of feminism and saying, not only can you do this as a Christian, but you really kind of should. And that is, again, you can certainly find people who are going to argue that if you look hard enough for them, just as you can find people on the other side who are going to say that this lifestyle or that lifestyle is not only compatible with Christianity, but really the kind of the right way of doing it. And of course, that you can fall off any kind of cliff. And so I think this is a good example of falling off the feminist cliff and trying to take Jesus with you.
Evangelical women generally are going to be, they're going to be Bible-believing to, by some definition. They're going to be pro-life. They're going to be pro-family, pro-natural marriage. So how in the world do we get to the point where some of them are drawn to this kind of feminism, and in particular to supporting presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, who kind of embodies the antithesis of some of those things?
Exactly. You'll see a lot of that conflicted thinking in the Washington Post article itself. You have some of the people who are interviewed saying, well, you shouldn't vote for someone just because she's a woman. But then some of them do say that. And because that is their motivating principle, they are willing to give up some of those things that really do seem overtly anti-Christian. People who are even willing to say, well, I know abortion is wrong, but it's more important to have a woman president than to have anti-abortion legislators and executives. It's more important to have a woman president than to have a commander-in-chief who is opposed to this redefining of marriage such that marriage is really not a thing anymore. That's more important to them than anything else. And one of the people included in the interview actually says that. She says, I believe these things because I'm a Christian. To her, that is the material principle of her Christianity. What do you say about women? What do you believe about women? And her entire faith and her living out of her faith begins from there. And if that's where you're coming from, then you're not coming from the actual root of the Christian faith, which is salvation by grace through faith for Christ's sake because of his sacrificial work on the cross. And that, if that's where you begin, then you're just absolutely off kilter and there's no way it can go right.
I mean, there are going to be some of the Jesus feminists that are like that, and I think you're right, seeing that reflected there in the story from the Washington Post. There are also going to be some who are going to say, look, you know, I still want to be pro-life, and I'm not going to compromise those things, but golly, there is kind of a satisfying nature to the symbolic value of having a woman, whoever it may be, it doesn't matter who it is, but having a woman, even if it's Hillary Clinton, elected to be president of the United States.
Right. There is, you know, that's the kind of an identity politics line of thinking that's very common. I kind of want to outsource this. Yesterday at Touchstone, there was a really good post from S.M. Hutchins, and he addressed this. He said, Touchstone gets guff fairly regularly. Touchstone magazine from the Fellowship of St. James gets guff fairly regularly because we don't have any women among our senior editors. And his, I'm going to read directly from his article here. He says, no women, no matter how intelligent or cultivated, count as a true woman in the egalitarian calculus, except where she is equal in her formal measure of power to the man, no matter how much she may inform and influence him. And he talks about how, even though all the senior editors there are married or widowed, they have daughters, they have mothers, they have sisters, none of that counts in the feminist worldview. The only thing that counts is for women to do everything exactly equally to what men do in exactly the same ways, that this can be measured and documented. That's the only thing that matters. And he says that supposedly in a situation like this that you lack the woman's perspective. And my question for that is, what is the woman's perspective? I would like to see that defined, because the truth is that every woman has her own perspective. Perspective is an absolutely individual fact of life. And so there really isn't any such thing as this kind of socialized concept of what women think or how they see the world. They all see it as differently as every individual man does.
There's also at work here, and we've talked about this before, a very early and often unacknowledged concession to feminism that, okay, feminism has wrought a lot of nonsense and downright wickedness in society, but there's a nugget of truth in there that we need to embrace about gender equality, about kind of the interchangeability of male and female that has done some good things. What's your response to that?
The problem there is that all of us at this point in history have received the feminist version of history. And that basically goes like this. Until about 10 or 15 minutes ago, all women did nothing but housekeeping and cooking and having babies until they died of misery, and also they were pretty often beaten by most men. Like, that's what we hear from feminism. If we had not had feminism happen, then we would all still be living under these conditions. And so there are two assumptions there. The first is that that's true, that women were living horrible lives of misery until formal feminism enacted its ideas and program. Second is that feminism is solely responsible for the changes that we have seen between men and women in the West in the last century and a half or so. And I don't believe that's true either. There have been other huge changes in society in that time, most notably in technology. And I think if what feminists say were true about misogyny and what the world was really like, then we wouldn't have inventions like sewing machines and refrigerators and disposable diapers and all these things that make women's lives easier, not to mention medical technologies that have taken childbirth from being one of the most dangerous human experiences to something that right now in our country, most people don't have to think twice about. There are going to be complications along the way for a lot of women, but hearing of a woman actually dying in childbirth is so rare for us that we really take for granted all of those things that have been huge changes in human history and surely would not have happened if men valued women as little as feminists claim that they do.
So you're saying there, Rebecca, that feminism is claiming credit for things that it did not bring about.
Absolutely. There are market forces at work. There are social forces at work beyond feminism, such as men care about their mothers, they care about their wives, they care about their daughters, they care about their sisters, they want their lives to be easier, and they work to make that happen. Most of the inventions and technological advances that have served women well have not been made by women. They were figured out and enacted by men. There's a whole lot going into that besides just, some ladies wearing bloomers carrying signs and saying, we think that you should invent disposable diapers. But feminism wants to take credit for all of those things. It wants to say that only now are women happy and only because we made that happen.
So if we can remove, so to speak, that unacknowledged presupposition, as you called it, the feminist version of history, and see it for what it is, that men have not been the enemies of women, but have contributed to the furtherance of women in both their rights and their status and all of those kinds of things. Is that a lesson that some of these young evangelical women need to learn? Maybe some remedial work in removing the revisionist history of feminism?
Absolutely. And that's very hard to do. You know, any book that's been written in the last 50 years or so absolutely adopts that position that these changes really all are a result, primarily, if not in a very overwhelming way, by feminism. And I just, I sympathize. It's hard to get your way out of that kind of thinking. It's what's taught in schools. It is absolutely the prevailing mindset that people in our culture and our society have, that without feminism, every woman in this country would still be barefoot and pregnant in her kitchen and, abused by whoever wished to abuse her, and there would be no protections for her, either in her own home or in the law, and that feminism gave us all those things. There are all kinds of ways to learn your way out of that, even in reading fiction from previous times and seeing realistic portrayals of home life. It's very easy to see from that perspective that that's not a true story. That's not what our history looks like.
With only about 30 seconds here, one of the things I noted in the Washington Post piece is that the young evangelical women who are advocating for these kind of things also just so happen to be advocating for women's roles in the churches being expanded. With about 30 seconds, your thoughts there.
Funny how those two things go together. Everything has been reduced to a job, and your job is based on your intelligence. And if you're intelligent enough to, be a managing editor at Christianity Today, then why shouldn't you be a pastor too? Isn't your perspective as valuable there? Aren't your gifts as valuable in the pulpit as they are anywhere else in society, except, of course, in your own home?
Rebecca Curtis is a pastor's wife and mother of seven children. She has a master's degree from Concordia Seminary, co-author of the book Ladylike, Living Biblically. You can find out more about Ladylike at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand or call Concordia Publishing House and order Ladylike, Living Biblically, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Rebecca, thank you very much for being our
Thanks
guest.
Thanks so much.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to get a review of the movie Ghostbusters from Pastor Ted Giese. This is one of those movies that has excited many and just irritated others. We'll see what he thinks about it. We'll also do our series Christ in the Old Testament. We'll discuss the prophet Ezekiel with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. And we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Job. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Have you recently graduated from high school or college and are still making up your mind about your future career? Here's an opportunity to serve your neighbor through an extended, uniquely Lutheran service program. It's called the Lutheran Youth Corps. Find out more about the Lutheran Youth Corps at lcms.org/youthcorps. Life together through witness and mercy, the Lutheran Youth Corps, lcms.org/youthcorps.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
The Church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.